We're on this morning with Ed Curry from Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Ed, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Before we get underway here, I want people to understand better what you do there at Associated Bank. So what's your job?
I'm a residential loan officer. So I assist clients with purchasing, refinancing, new construction loans to assist them with one, two, three, or four unit properties. We do have a commercial group here, but I concentrate on the residential side.
We're going to focus in on some mortgage questions today because you're the expert on some of this stuff. And we saw this article that kind of listed all of the different mistakes that people make when they refinance their mortgage. And one of the big questions that I think a lot of folks have, especially if they're in a 30-year fixed and they want to refinance, is do they start that clock all over again with another 30 or no?
You know, it really does depend on the person's individual situation. I really conceptually love the conversation of 30-year fixed versus 15-year fixed. There's even an advanced conversation as it applies to estate planning and financial planning. But, it really boils down to the benefits of a 15-year fix is you've got a lower interest rate and you pay off the loan quicker. And certainly on paper, if you model this out, you're going to pay less interest over the life of the loan. Whereas a 30-year fix, it's going to be out there a much longer time. You may never pay it off. The kids may have to pay it off one day or no one, but ultimately you've got a much lower payment but a higher interest rate. And so it really depends on, what can your budget afford. Over the years, I've seen clients push themselves to do that 15-year fixed, which is very admirable, and if it works for somebody, I certainly recommend it. But the downside is a lot of cases, clients in a push to pay off their loan as quickly as possible may miss some things or add some things, adding credit card debt, for example. I'll have clients that will at times take on a 15-year fix, and then a few years later I chat with them and they have $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 of credit card debt that they now want to refinance again to consolidate. So that could be a downside. Pushing yourself to go to a shorter term before you've done other financial things, such as setting up an emergency fund. We've seen how important that is during COVID-19 here, having an emergency fund in case you lose your job or in case you need to cover some unexpected expenses. If you have kids, setting up a college fund is really, really important to do. And also setting up your own retirement. Certainly you want to, if you have a company that has a 401k, you want to make sure you're investing in the 401k. Absolutely, if there's a match, that's free money. So those are some of the things that I would recommend doing before you push yourself into that 15-year fix. If you're doing all of those things and want to move to a 15-year fix and you're comfortable, it makes perfect sense. I'm, ironically, as a mortgage guy, debt adverse. Debt is not something I like, and in a perfect world, you pay that off as quickly as possible. But, the advanced conversation on paying the loan down quicker than normal is the idea of having those extra funds to have the money grow, whether it be in a college fund or a retirement fund. You could model a scenario where instead of paying your loan down an extra $500 a month, you're taking that $500 and it's growing in a retirement account, growing in a college education account. And if you're paying 3% on your mortgage, historically, you should be able to make more than 3% on your assets. So at the end of the day, everybody wants the same thing, right? Is when it's time to retire, you have more money at the end than when you started. And in some cases, for some people, kind of investing in the market can be a more efficient way to do that than paying your mortgage down as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and there used to be tax questions involved, too. I know that there was a time when most people would keep a mortgage so that they could deduct it from their taxes. But all of that sort of changed with the tax bill, didn't it?
It did a little bit. It reduced the taxable amount down to $750,000 write-off. So there's a certain segment of the population, if the loan is above that, there's less of a benefit. Ultimately, does it make sense to carry a debt just so you can write off 25% of it? You know, that's another theoretical question to consider as well. I think ultimately the bigger question, and you're absolutely right, tax benefits and tax issues need to play into your decision making. But ultimately, if you can take the approach of what is best for me, my family, makes the most sense.
There's oftentimes we hear that you can save money by refinancing your mortgage. There are a lot of scenarios where you might either be paying a higher interest rate or you can pay off debt, as you've been talking about paying off some other that other debt. When does that scenario not work? When is it a situation where you refinance your mortgage, you think it's going to save you money, but it doesn't? What goes wrong in that scenario?
You know, putting aside the debt consolidation, because there are certainly debt consolidation mortgages that happen that on paper, the cash flow looks like you're saving thousands of dollars a month, but you're really just shifting debt from one place to another. I think ultimately it boils down to when a refinance makes sense is that break-even point. You have to figure out how much you're going to save on a monthly basis and what sort of closing costs you'll have to make that savings. And, you know, the break-even point is, you know, if you're going to save $200 a month and it's going to cost you $2,000 to refinance, simply put, that's a 10-month break-even point. I think if you can have that break even less than a year, and certainly the assumption is you're going to be living in your home for the foreseeable future, if that is 12 months or less, it makes a ton of sense. When you start getting to 2 years and farther out, then it doesn't make a lot of sense because life does happen. People change jobs, people move. You know, right now, especially with work from home, more and more people are making decisions that they don't need to live where they're living because they can work from home. So you certainly want to be extremely cognizant of what that break-even point is. One of the approaches you can also take as well is to have the lender price the refinance with zero closing costs. And what I mean by that is take a fictitious rate at 3%. Let's say it's going to cost you $2,000 to refinance. Maybe at 3.25%, it will cost you $0. Obviously, there's no free lunch. You're paying it through a higher interest rate. But that's a great way to really decide, okay, what would at zero closing costs be my monthly savings? And if at zero closing costs, you're able to save $150 a month, then it's really, do you want to put the effort in to go through the mortgage process to save $150 a month, as an example? And so I think that's one of the things you can do to analyze whether it makes sense for you or not.
You know, as people get ready to get into the process of refinancing, they may have a time frame ahead where they think they're going to do that. What is the best advice you can give them about making sure that they get the lowest rate for that refinance or the mortgage?
The lowest rate is interesting because there's so much information out there. It doesn't seem to be consistent, and rates are all over the board. So one key concept to make sure we understand is it's not all about the rate. It's all about rates and fees. So you could have a fictitious rate of 3% and be paying $2,000 in closing costs. That same lender would be able to offer you a 2.5% interest rate, a lot higher closing costs, or a higher interest rate, like 3.25% and zero closing costs. So don't just focus on the rates. In terms of being able to get that lowest rate, you know, normally I really believe in referrals. Online shopping can be somewhat treacherous. You tend to, online, it's all about the rate. So you're looking at these really, really low rates. Well, you haven't seen the fees yet. I can guarantee you that those fees are going to be pretty high. So it takes a while to fully understand what the real deal is there. And often with online lenders, you're typically working with staff that's a lot less qualified to handle a mortgage. While we would love to think that a mortgage is something you can just pull off the shelf, individual finances vary greatly. And so one loan is not the same from another. So you need people who have experienced a number of different financial scenarios to make sure that you're going to be successfully be able to close on that loan. So my recommendation typically is get a couple referrals from friends, family, neighbors of people that they've worked with. Right now, I'd recommend maybe 3 or 4. And the reason I say that is because the market is still at a pretty high capacity. So there are some lenders that are artificially raising their interest rates just to slow incoming business in because they simply can't handle the volume. There's no sense in taking in a new client, a new loan, if it's going to take 90 or 120 days to qualify or to close that loan, rather. So you want to get as many referrals as you can. The other nice thing about working with people that have been referred to you is they want to make sure they do a good job for you because the person who referred them is a client. So they don't want news to get back to that referral source that they did a bad job for you. Whereas going back to the online lender, they don't really care. It's all about numbers. So the referral sources are the best way to go, and that way you should be able to get a really, really competitive rate and most importantly, close. Because without being able to close on that rate, the rate's no good.
As you well know, there's still a lot of people who are out of work because of the pandemic and facing all kinds of issues when, you know, paying the mortgage is one of them. And somebody asked me recently about paying a mortgage with a credit card. And I thought, well, Ed is the perfect person to ask about that. Would you recommend that?
You know, I think you have to separate choice versus necessity. There are some people who love the points, right? Love the miles, and would love in a perfect world to buy big ticket items with credit cards. Perhaps they have the capacity to pay off a large item on a monthly basis, and it's all about being able to earn those rewards. So many people would love to do it if the banks will allow them. Not a lot of banks do allow it. For the banks that do allow it, you need to understand, is there a fee? You know, merchants will be charged a fee from the credit card companies to process those payments. And most banks will charge a fee, 2.5% to 3%, to process that. So will the bank be passing along that fee to you? There are some banks that won't charge any fee. So then if you have the choice and ability to charge that and pay it off monthly, for a lot of people it makes a ton of sense. But if once you put in place the fee, the value of the reward, whether it be miles or cash back, disappears. So then it doesn't make sense. Now, there are some cases where people going to necessity, maybe they may be 15 days late. And typically on when you're late 15 days on a mortgage, the lender is going to charge you a 5% late charge to your mortgage. The math gets a little fuzzy here because that 5% penalty is based on the principal and interest payment, whereas most people escrow for taxes and insurance. So their full mortgage payment is larger than just the principal and interest payment. So that 3% payment on the larger amount most likely would be less than the 5% late charge. But if it's a situation where you're not going to be able to get a check to the bank in time before you charge this 5% late fee, you certainly can argue as a one-off it would make sense to make that payment and even pay the 2.5% to 3% fee. And then when it comes to the 30-day late, that's when it hits your credit. Being late on a mortgage on your credit report typically will have some significant ramifications. So you want to try to avoid this at all costs. If that means paying a fee, it probably makes sense for most people to do that. I certainly would do that rather than have a 30-day late on my credit. And then long-term, like you said, a lot of people are out of work, and they don't have the ability to write that check. So then it really does go to having multiple rates on their credits, the impact that may have. You know, if they don't have plans to refinance or purchase a new home or do other things that will require them to have stellar credit, you know, then, I mean, if they're not able to make the payment, then possibly putting on the credit card makes the most sense.
Ed, great advice as always and great conversation this morning. Thank you. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Feel free to reach out to me via email, ed.currie@associatedbank.com. That's ed.currie@associatedbank.com.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great day.